Well, thank you. I'm Shad Nelson from Texas A&M University, Kingsville. I was hired there about 16 years ago, and I was hired specifically to look at some water management strategies to improve citrus production, mainly because we were going through 3 years of intense drought prior to my hire in 2001. Of course, it started raining in 2002, and a lot of people forget about water management conservation after that, but we've had significant funding and support by the Texas Water Development Board. The citrus industry isn't huge in Texas. It's the third largest in the United States, following Florida and California. However, we do have a niche product there, which is the deep red, real red varieties of citrus, which we argue is by far the sweetest and best tasting grapefruit on the market. And people do value it highly. Just to explain some small changes over the last few years, our market, even though there's only 28,000 acres of citrus in Texas, about 3 years ago, that had a value of about $40 million, and now it's an $80 million industry, even though we've decreased acreage about 2,500 acres in that period of time. So you see the ramifications of HLB, but you see the changes that happened from one state to another as Florida's facing their challenges. We have HLB in Texas. It showed up in 2012, but it doesn't seem to affect grapefruit in our region as quickly as it does in Florida, which we don't have the pressure yet. We're located in the very southern tip of the United States, the continental United States, right along the Mexico border. We have three counties that are served in Texas, all fed by two reservoirs. And the reservoirs are on the Mexican side, and we share those water resources between Mexico and Texas. We have an agreement with Mexico that they're supposed to supply us the amount of water, a certain amount of water every 5 years, and they complete that by waiting for a hurricane to show up, and we can't hold enough water back in the reservoirs, so it all goes down and basically goes into the Gulf of Mexico. So that agreement has never really been held up over our time. So when intense droughts hit, they become pretty devastating to the irrigated region of South Texas, and it's becoming more so. So the last intense drought that we had, within 2 years, the farmers were on restrictions for water allocations, and that's how quickly we're draining those reservoirs because of increased production on the Mexican side and the needs for agriculture on the U.S. side. So the Texas Water Development Board invested about $3.8 million into a 10-year study of on-farm water conservation practices that are ongoing and pretty much for citrus industry in our area. It's primarily flood irrigation. We have some microjet spray, sprinkler spray irrigation, and some drip irrigation. Microjets are pretty good in the fact that it can target water beneath the tree canopy where most of the feeder roots are, and we could do that, especially does quite well on mature trees. Weed management is always an issue. Single line drips, those growers, the few growers that were investing in drip irrigation, had mature trees that were on flood irrigation, transferred those over to drip irrigation, and were using single lines when I showed up, and I said, you're most likely going to stress those trees as soon as drought hit. Sure enough, that was the case, and I said, you're going to have to invest in a dual-line drip system, move the drips tapes a little further out, drip lines further out, so that you can feed all the fruit feeder roots. So not only the investment of the drip tape the first time, which is about $1,500 to $1,800 per acre, they had to add more investment to properly take care of mature trees. This is really how we irrigate in South Texas. And for most states, that would be impractical, and it is around the world. But when you have 85% of the citrus growers flooding, irrigating this way, why do they do it? Because water's cheap. When you have water at $27 to $35 an acre foot, That's very inexpensive water, because all we have to do is lift water from the river into the canal, and that's not a very expensive energy cost. When you get up into some areas where you have to have some pumping, obviously that increases the cost for water. But for our case, there's no incentive for the growers to change when water becomes or stays as cheap as it is. So the only incentive to change is a desire to change, or they're used to the practice of using drip lines or microjet. In traditional flood irrigation, some of the challenges with that is it leads to excessive amount of water percolating beyond the affected rooting zone, which really is basically the upper 45 centimeters of soil profile. Pesticides and fertilizers percolate beyond the rooting depth as well. So one of the proposed alternative flood irrigation strategies is what we call border flood irrigation, where we basically form wide raised berms between the rows, and we're able to channel the water quickly down the row from one end of the field to the other. And this more adequately targets the effective rooting zone, minimizes deep percolation and fertilizer loss, but more importantly, results in water savings about a third. And we did some comparative research studies along with our on-farm demonstration projects. We're talking about 40-acre demonstration sites. And it was interesting that the research data was equivalent to the on-farm water use data, both of those saving about 36% water by border flood irrigation over traditional flood irrigation. More importantly, what's important for the growers to lead to change is, does it make more money in my pocket? And the border flood irrigation had $10,000 more per acre on the cumulative 10-year cash flow over traditional flood. More importantly, it exceeded that of microjet, sprinkler spray, or drip irrigation. And it is interesting that the drip irrigators, in many cases, use just as much water in Texas as the flood irrigation, traditional flood irrigation. And why was that the case? Well, they were turning it on and leaving it on more frequently because they have it in mind, well, I'm going to stress my trees if I irrigate. So education is needed for drip irrigation as well. Our advice to flood irrigators for mature trees, we advocate that they transition to narrow border flood if they want to one, save water, all right? Two, it's a low-cost investment to raise those berms. We did some economic assessment of that as well. Improves the ability to keep the fertilizer and pesticides in the effective rooting zone. But most importantly, bang for your buck. I think because we're keeping the fertilizers in place, not stressing the trees as much as traditional flood, and they have a better yield pack out for the marketable fruit size. Less of it goes to the juice market, where for our industry, grapefruit that goes to the juice market, primarily they don't make money off of what they've invested in that crop. They get that money back if it goes to the juice market. So we're all about the marketable fruit market, fresh market. So the Texas program for ag water efficiency, has it led to change? Well, the truth is, we have some that have increased and changed from traditional flood irrigation to border flood irrigation, but overall, the answer is not really. All right? So you have an economic change, but it's not enough incentive to change. Well, we had a visitor from, that was a board log fellow from Morocco, and Dr. Mahmoud Oussetemou, who's an entomologist at the Citrus Center, and myself had a reciprocal exchange, visited Morocco, and what we observed over there is they had some high-density plantings of citrus on raised beds. Now, these were considerably high raised beds, probably a little less than a meter high, but it got us to thinking, you know, in Texas, we flood irrigate. It's all on flat ground, and let's try a new planting design. And so as scientists, we collaborated together. Let's see how grapefruit production can be on raised beds. And not only incorporate the raised bed strategy, we didn't make a bed that was about a meter high. We only have it maybe 12 inches or 30 centimeters high. And then we cover some of those with a plastic mesh. It's a permeable mesh. And that's a strategy that's integrated, kind of an integrated pest management strategy and water conservation strategy together. So we have an experimental site there on the Citrus Center. One, the flatbed with cover, raised beds with cover. We have raised beds without cover, and the traditional planting, which is basically a flatbed, no cover. And for this site, we have flood irrigation. For the raised beds, you can notice over here that the raised bed with cover doesn't have water where the tree roots are. So by lateral water movement, that's how water gets to the tree. And then over on this area, we have more of the traditional planting. This is a raised bed without cover row. Well, what are the advantages of some of this cover? We had increased water use efficiency, increased tree growth, and increased yield under the raised bed. And we have we don't need to apply water as often because we have water that's retained under that plastic. Weed control and vine control decreases, and pest management and disease incidence decreases. For us, one of our big problems is Phytophthora disease, and that is transmitted by the water from tree to tree, especially in flood irrigation. So if we can prevent the Phytophthora spores from touching the tree, all the better for us. And we're seeing that also. But Diapropis weevil is also a challenge for us, and we can interrupt that life cycle by the plastic mesh and decrease, actually get rid of that weevil problem. So this site was planted in 2012. We observe that for tree height in the areas where we have cover, we do have increased tree height at this site. As far as yield is concerned, there's some yield variability here, but we do see increased yield from those with raised bed with ground cover. More importantly, where is this going? It's interesting to see the change over a short period of time by the growers now. Currently, there are 145 acres of new raised bed plantings with ground cover, 120 acres under drip and microjet, 25 under this flood irrigation practice, and 90 acres of raised bed without ground cover. Raised bed plantings with tarp are being implemented by seven citrus growers, two major companies, Wonderful Citrus and Edinburgh Citrus. And because Wonderful Citrus is coming from California, they're used to drip irrigation. So when they're installing these, they're installing drip irrigation as well. So now we're starting finally to see drip irrigation and water conservation practices increase in the lower Rio Grande Valley because we have a company that basically understands how to manage with that system and understands the upfront cost associated with drip irrigation. So raised bed plantings with tarp cover are planned for putting them in October. Land is already prepared and covered for another 150 acres in the lower Rio Grande Valley. So we're seeing this to increase, grow. That's a very big change and positive sign altogether. So the take-home message is for growers that have mature trees and are going to stay with flood irrigation, they should transition those trees over to narrow border flood for water conservation, improved economic gain. Those that are planting new trees to invest in this raised bed planting design. I'd like to acknowledge co-authors and colleagues. One, the Texas Water Development Board for supporting the research. Also, USDA NEFA, we're a Hispanic serving institution in the National Needs Fellows Grant Program for funding many of the graduate students. Dr. Catherine Simpson is in the back, and Dr. Mamadou Setemu, Dr. Benjamin Turner, Julian Sauls, graduate student, and Sri Telegonseti, who's a research assistant aide at the Citrus Center. Any questions? Yes, the drip lines are underneath the covers when they're planted that way.